Good morning. Welcome to Hope Is Now, a Blog Talk radio show sponsored by The Respite, the Center for Grief and Hope. And we are having a little bit of some feedback today, a little bit of a tech. Oh, there it's gone. All right.
It's awesome.
Okay. Yay. Hooray. So today I have the honor and the privilege to speak to my dear friend and soul sister, Gypsy Liz Hunley. I want to give you a chance to say good morning, Gyp.
Good morning, Mandy. How are you?
I'm doing awesome, and I'm so glad that you're with us today.
Thank you. I'm honored.
Thank you, friend. So what we're going to do, guys, is I'm going to introduce the show as I always do. We're going to speak about our topic today, and then we're going to move into our conversations with this awesome woman, Gypsy Hunley. So today's show, this whole series is about introducing you all to incredible leaders, inspiring stories, and weaving that through the model of heart-centered grief. We wanted to bring you some very live, real stories to put flesh on the bones of the model. And our purpose is to support you in your journey. Our purpose is to encourage you, inspire you, and to fire you up around your own incredible life story. So today, as always, I'm here live with my dear friend and my coworker, Cindy Bolero. Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning.
And Cindy is the producer of our show, and she is near and dear to my heart. And Cindy is going to introduce Gypsy to you guys this morning. Go right ahead, Cindy.
Well, thanks so much. And Gypsy, I'm so glad you're here with us today. So Gypsy Hunley has been painting full-time for over 10 years, which is just amazing to be able to live and love your passion so much and be able to do it for that long. Her work has been displayed in galleries throughout the nation and purchased from thousands of people worldwide. She started out as an outsider or folk artist, and she spent years traveling unknown roads, touring art shows, speaking at galleries, while living out of her van. And I'll tell you, I've seen that van, and it is one special van. her tenacity.
Yeah, I don't make a very good stalker.
Gave her the strength to move forward, and we are so happy that you have had that tenacity and stuck with your art's passion of creating such beautiful art, and we welcome you to the show today.
Thank you so much, Cindy. I'm glad to be here, and I'm so honored that you guys would ask me to do this interview today.
Yeah,
sure.
Awesome. Thank you, Cindy. So I want to say a few words about you, Gypsy, and how you have touched me and touched my life. And so about, I would say, 7 years ago, I was at this Blue Ridge Barbecue Festival in Tryon, North Carolina. They've had it for over 20 years. And my daughter was 2, and I was pushing her in the stroller, and I saw this, you know, there were artists there with their displaying their works and selling their art and their crafts. And I saw this beautiful blonde woman in these braids sitting there with all of this incredible, bright, you know, vibrant, incredible images, these paintings with all these incredible words. And, I mean, I was touched immediately. And that day I bought, I think, like 5 pieces from you. And then it wasn't for about, it was probably a process of 4 to 5 years later, I was at, it was Memorial Day weekend, my dear friend Tammy Starling was with me, and we were at the Garden Festival in Hendersonville, and we were walking through, and I saw this painted bust, and it drew me into the booth, all these colors, and I thought to myself, this looks so familiar, and there you were, and you said, hi, And you said, "Don't I know you?" And I said, "Oh my God, it's you." Because I had remembered you and you remembered me from our exchange all those years before. And so what I want to say about you, there's always so much to say about a human being. And what I want to say about your spirit is this devotion that you have to taking your life experiences, the joy in your life, and the wounding and suffering in your life, and transforming it into something inspiring and beautiful and meaningful and fun and awake and alive. And for you all, my home is basically a gypsy gallery. I mean, there is artwork everywhere. And
she
and
wins.
My
you have like 48 pieces, right?
yeah. And the purpose of all of that is to bring joy and vibrancy to my spirit and the spirit of my child and the home that we live in, to encourage us, to inspire us, and to help us hold life. Because art reflects to us our reality as human beings. And I, of course, will let you say a lot about that. But as we open up into our conversation today, I just want to say to all of our listeners that what I love about you so much is you are so authentically raw. You are so fully your spirit, your being. And that is what the world needs. The world needs human beings who are walking around who give themselves permission to fully be who they are and to bring their gifts to the world. And I want to say that for those of you that are looking through the watch or listening through the Blog Talk Radio webpage, we have two of Gypsy's paintings on a slideshow. So you can click on the show and you can see her incredible artwork. So I want to let you know that for those of you that aren't familiar with her work, it's right there. You also can find her work on our Facebook page. If the rest of it, once we're finished with the show, we'll be putting up a link to her website. So welcome, my dear friend. And I want to ask you this question that I ask a lot. I ask all the leaders that I interview on this show, and I like to tease and say, you know, this radio show is not your average radio show. We are not going to be talking about Kim Kardashian's booty. We're going to be talking about life and real life and meaningful life and things that matter in life. And all of those lighthearted radio shows are important. We need that entertainment. We need to be able to laugh. But we also need depth. And I like to say that these are the get real sessions. And so the question that I ask leaders is, you know, share with us one of the great heartbreaks in your life, and how has that led you into your calling?
Mandy, I'd have to say that the biggest heartbreak in my life was I have two sons, and my younger son is an addict. And dealing with his addiction for years by myself, going through stages of enabling him and trying to be strong and making decisions, eventually, long story short, he ended up going to prison for 2.5 years. Yeah. A young man full of life and creativity and a smile that could steal the room and just, you know, watching him disappear, not seeing his soul behind his eyes, basically losing someone that was still walking around and breathing. And, you know, being here through the entire thing of watching him be handcuffed and taken away and not knowing when you're going to see your baby again and the sleepless nights of not knowing what's going on in prison and, you know, the letters that are sent back and forth and the phone calls and the tears and, you know, trying to get that last scent of his, you know, his smell on his shirt while he's gone and, And, you know, although it can't be compared to a permanent situation, you know, it was still so heartbreaking for me and still is, Mandy, because it's, you know, there's remission in addiction, but there's always that chance of, of it reoccurring. So you pretty much sit on the edge of the bridge for your whole life,
yeah,
wondering when that's
yeah
going to happen. But
yeah,
finding a place of peace when he was gone, and I poured myself into my artwork, and I'm a writer as well. And I know a lot of people who are clients of mine, they love my writing and my paintings. I know you have several.
Oh, yeah.
And I used that pain, that grief of the unknown, and I poured that into my paintings and did series and series of these for probably over a year. It was as if I couldn't paint anything else except what I was feeling inside. And it was amazing how it touched so many other people, because I can't tell you the people that came to me and told me stories, complete strangers, about addiction and about what they had gone through and the process of it and the pain involved and the domino effect. And so it was just, I saw that it was reaching out to so many other people and evolving into, you know, something more mighty than what I thought I was doing. I was just expressing myself through the art. And all of a sudden, this whole gate opened up and the flood came in and, you know, stories after stories. So hearing stories from other people is a huge part of my art as well. You know, the joyful stories, the good stories. I'm very observant. I sit and watch people continually. I like to listen to what children say. I like to listen to how couples talk to one another. And I put that into my work. So it's not just all about, you know, where my pain came from and stemmed from. It's using other people's, you know, grief and pain. And it still is an amazing journey and has been since all of this happened.
Yeah. I mean, when I, you know, was pulled, you know, this painting, this bust that I bought it. It's sitting on my dining room table. But this painting, that pulled me in, and then you and I began talking and sharing, and you were sharing with me about Nick being in prison, and then then that day I bought two other large paintings from you that are hanging upstairs. And what touched me so much was, again, how you took your grief and transformed it into something deeply meaningful and beautiful using joy and using vibrant color. I mean, that dance, that paradox of both touched me so much. And that is so much of what my work is about and our work is about at The Respite, is encouraging people to see the beauty within their story, no matter what has happened to them, and encouraging people to be in the real of their story. And what I mean by that is not pretending like you're not hurting so deeply, because we live in a culture that encourages us to pretend like we're not hurting. I met with three women yesterday whose the daughter had died. So who was sitting in my office was her 80-some-year-old mother and her two daughters that are in their late 30s and early 40s. And the dialogue that we had was how already 3 months later, they're feeling that cultural pressure to have closure, if you will, and move on, if you will. And that well-meaning friends who adore them and knew this woman, her name was Charlotte, I adored her, they're well-meaning, they're trying to be supportive, but the reality is that's not how the human psyche works. We have pain and it stays with us, and of course we want to seek joy, of course we want to see victory and successes in our lives, but the suffering in our lives is just as big of an important part of carving who we are. I mean, your art would not be so impactful and would not touch people so deeply with the vibrancy of the color if you had not been bleeding on the floor in your life many times.
Absolutely.
And that's what we have to learn to really embrace And the fact that I could, the fact that I saw that you got that, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to know this woman. I'm going to know this woman, and her art is going to be in my home to inspire my child, and inspire my clients, and inspire the people that I know. And that is exactly what you're doing. And I want to say I love so much what you were saying, that basically that what then happened as you started sharing your story about Nick and his struggles and what you've gone through, that mm-hmm. you then, people started sharing their story, and it became this life of its own that was bigger than you.
Yeah,
they're just like you connected. It's like you connected with the force of life, the divine
right.
energy of life, and that people recognize that in your spirit and see that in your work, and how you weave in through your writing other people's stories. And
yes.
and this to me is about what I want to say one last thing in this moment. To me, this is what service is about, that that I wanted to speak with you about step 6 of the model of heart-centered grief, these 7 steps of grief and hope. Step 6 is about service, and I've been interviewing leaders recently around this step because I find it endlessly fascinating how our stories and our pain and our disappointments in life and our heartbreak inform us around our calling, that incredible relationship between the two, and how you're taking these painful struggles around addiction, which I want us to speak about that more, and you're using it to serve. And that is badass, my friend. I mean, that is awesome. That inspires so many people, and it gives other people permission to feel. Do you see what I mean?
Yes.
To feel.
Well, addiction, too, is something that is shameful and embarrassing to many families. And,
yeah.
you know, it can get to a point of humiliation because of you know, being out in public and people knowing. And, you know, my son was on the front page of every newspaper from here to Greenville, which is, you know, an hour away from me, and on the news. And so
sure.
there is, Mandy, there is no more humiliating me. I mean, I've been through the ringer with it. So, you know, it's like, bring it on. You just, you know, I had to face my neighbors. I had to face my friends. I lost friends. So that's when I decided, you know what, turn it around. Don't be ashamed. You know, addiction
yeah.
doesn't pick a face, a race, a place. It can happen to anyone in anyone's family, and you
Amen.
Have to accept it. And once you admit it, and once you accept it, you are able to open that door for those other people that are going and experiencing the exact same thing you are. And
yeah.
I mean, I've sold paintings to people who have had children, you know, accidentally overdose and die
yeah.
and. You know, hearing their stories, and so it's just something that you know, definitely should be talked about a whole lot more, and not be an embarrassing subject. I mean, people daily talk about their family members having cancer. Well, addiction is
right,
a disease as well.
Right. Yes. Yes. You know, I think that another reason why it's so important that you're on our show, Hope Is Now, is that, you know, we are at the respite. We're waving this banner that grief does not mean death. You know, I mean,
right.
innocently, we all, when we hear the word grief, innocently, we do think it means death. And so
absolutely.
I'm saying this with a lot of support for all of our listeners. I mean, that's what we've been taught. And that there's a reality. Grief is woven into every area of our lives naturally, mm-hmm. every stage of our lives. It's
mm-hmm.
it's a part of, we're constantly moving forward. We're constantly letting go from the moment that we leave our mother's womb until we take our last breath. And that is normal. And that's a part of our very beautiful, sacred, authentic human journey. And so speaking about addiction and the tens of thousands of losses that it brings into people's lives, of course, people are grieving. There doesn't have to be a death for there to be grief that shatters you on the floor.
You had to peel me off of the floor sometimes. I mean, just, you know, waiting for what is going to happen. I mean, at that point, Mandy, it was one of two choices, and it was prison or death for my son. And he has been released, you know, a while back. But every day I, you know, through all of my art, through all of the creating, through talking to other people, there's still a little whisper in the back of my mind, is today the day that he goes back to it? Is today the day that I get a phone call that he's no longer with us? I mean, it's a constant grieving and fear, and fear and grieving are very similar. And I think they kind of go hand in hand with that anxiety and depression. And, you know, so, you know, everyone, like you said, grieving can come through people losing their homes, a divorce, a loss of a job. Yeah. I mean, this grieving is, you know, everyone's choice or not their choice to experience. And it doesn't have to be a death to feel such heartbreak.
No, there's something that I just adore that you said a few moments ago. It's like, you know, you can't humiliate me anymore. I mean, I just like that because, you know, it's about claiming the gorgeous beauty of our human stories. I mean, honestly, it's on one level, you know, I have this ferocious fury around shame. I just can't stand how human beings are shamed around our stories, around our humanity. I mean, we all make mistakes. We all fail. We all have defeats. I mean, it's like, let's get real, people. I mean, this is a part of becoming.
The only shame there should ever be is when you lie about what's going on, you know. And, you know, I'm one of these people who I'm an open book. And, you know, very selective on the people that I talk to about my experiences because I don't want to lie and I don't want to hide things and keep secrets. And I want to be able to express myself. And that way that helps any form of shame that you may feel is getting it out there.
Yeah. I mean, releasing it. It's like, And this is what I want you friends to really be thinking about: parts of your own story, losses that you've experienced, heartache that you've experienced, is to really think about, I am not going to allow shame to get a hold of me. I'm not going to allow myself to feel ashamed around mistakes I've made in my life. I'm not going to allow myself to feel ashamed about the depth of grief and pain that I feel. I mean, that's what I was saying to these three beautiful women yesterday. It's like you all are, my message for you is you're not doing anything wrong. As deeply as you're hurting is how much you loved Charlotte, how much you loved her. Of course you're grieving that deeply, and how much you wrestled throughout this whole journey with Nick. I mean, you know, the pain that you've had is I mean, grief is directly, friends, related to love. It's related to love. How much you love is directly correlated to how much you grieve. So I want to say that I'm so I want to ask you, Gyps, what do you wish that people understood about addiction?
Addiction is it's such a back and forth thing, Mandy. It's you know, addicts use you, they lie to you, they will manipulate you, they will do everything that they possibly can. I think that, you know, there are people who have addictions that you can break free from and not get entangled in their web and just say enough. But when you have a child or family member that is an addict, you're trying to understand it. And there is no understanding You know, I have this, my fireplace is painted, and it says, you know, all you need is love. Okay, well, that's true. That's all we need is love. But when you are dealing with an addict, there's not enough love in the world that is going to get that person to realize. And what people need to understand is the helplessness that you feel because you want to be able to conquer and fix and give them part of your, you know, your power and your beliefs, and you want to say, you can do it, you can do it, and put your cheerleading outfit on and every single day get up and say, you know, spell out their name and, you know, but people need to understand that it is not like that. And I wish I could fix the world. I really do, because addiction is getting extremely, extremely, it's rapid now, you know, and it just seems like everywhere you turn around. You know, remember back in the day when people would say, oh, you know, my 22-year-old cousin just died. And you would be like, was it a car accident? You know, oh, my God, was he sick? You know, now when people tell you, oh, my God, my 22-year-old cousin just died, immediately overdose. It's just so common now, and it's a shame. But you know, there's really not much I can, you know, advise about addiction, because it is, you know, you want to give up and just say forget it, screw it. You know, I don't want to be a part of this anymore. But when you're the healthy person on the other side, you keep thinking that you can change it, you can fix it, and you can do something about it.
You know, I think that one of the things that's important to restate is that addiction does not discriminate. I mean, truly, I mean, I in my work, I hear stories, you know, on a very regular basis. I mean, not only of addicts that are, you know, still living and still in the hell of being taken over by their addiction, but also, you know, I'm, you know, working with young widows whose husbands have died. And there's no discrimination going on here. I mean, these people, I mean, all walks of life, all socioeconomic status, you know, it's something that I think it's so important that the family members and the friends do what you do, and that is talk about it openly, is to be candid about it, to be candid that sometimes I'm not even sure what to say. You know, sometimes I don't know what the answer is. But to be honest about what a struggle it is and how important those boundaries are, and that while you're loving Nick and other people in your life who have struggled with addiction, that you're also taking care of yourself. Because it's something that you can completely disappear.
Get lost in,
Yeah, especially when it's your child.
I was completely lost in it, Mandy. I you know, there was a year straight that I couldn't even pay my mortgage. I was so depressed, and I just didn't know what to do, and I was losing my home. And, know, to have the thought of being homeless and going back and living in the van again, you know, like I did in the beginning of this business, you know, I just started to accept. And, you know, I had to grab a hold of myself as an individual instead of Nick's mom, instead of, you know, his friend or his healer. And I had to get me. Where are you going to live? You know, and I started, you know, getting help and filing for modifications, and, you know, proudly will say that, you know, I got mine, so I'm still in my home. But you start to lose everything. You lose your home. You lose part of yourself. You lose your mind, Mandy. You know, so. You know, and the initial, as he was taken off in the squad car, and it was a very emotional time, and, you know, going to the court dates and everything, and watching him, you know, be shackled and taken off for 2.5 years, not knowing where he was located, when they were going to transfer him. The system is really weird like that, with not letting family members know. So you have to wait to hear from your loved one and to figure out where they are. Yeah, so weeks and weeks and weeks can go by, and you have no idea where they're located. But I have to admit, you know, the truth is all I can speak is that after a few weeks of grieving him going to prison, I was relieved.
Yeah.
I was relieved.
Yeah.
I felt a sense of relief and you know, was able to rebuild my home and put things back in it and, you know, just wake up in the morning and know I wasn't going to walk in the room and find, you know, my son dead. So it was actually very relieving. And that's when I started my journey with all of the healing artwork. And, you know, writing things about grieving and just reaching into the deepest parts of my core spirit and saying, this is just going to go out there and I don't care if it sells or not. I don't care.
I have to get
this out of me. It's like this beast that's clawing to get out of you that's just like, let me out of here. I'm tired of being in this cage. And an interesting story is, again, I write as well. And I was in my studio one day, and I was painting, and I'm throwing paint, Mandy. It's being slapped at the canvas, and my fingers are through it, and I'm growling like a rabid animal because of the pain I was feeling inside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I sat down, and I picked up pen and paper, and I started writing this poem. Now, this isn't the rhyming type of poem. This is the...
Sure.
The regurgitating, let it all out, you know, throw up on paper poem.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I never edited that poem. I never went back and said, oh, well, it'd be better if it was written this way. That thing came out pure and raw. And it is one of the best things I have ever written in my life. And I took a lot of the phrases that I had written and put just sections of it into certain paintings. But the poem basically was based upon how the outside world, you know, does not know what goes on behind closed doors. And they can point fingers and they can say what they'd like as they go get their own prescription filled because it's legal and it's okay. You know, we're the filth because, you know, he's on the streets looking for it. And just to have that judgment passed at you, and the poem was titled "Justified Junkies," and again, you know, it was just about people who think that their prescriptive medications are allowed and okay because they're legal. And yes, there is a big difference, but you know, it's still the same torment, and it still just tears families apart, whether it's written out on a script or whether it's bought down on 7th Avenue.
Right. I mean, you know, I'm not an expert on the statistics of prescription drug use, but I know it is rampant. It is everywhere.
Yes.
And it is so common, and a lot of OD deaths, you know, are also from pills and the combination and concoctions of pills with alcohol. And so, I mean, it's about what I love about your, you know, this tenacity that you have and this raw speaking around addiction is, you know, you're really saying, look, guys, you know, it doesn't discriminate, you know, it doesn't discriminate. And that, you know, to keep a dialogue going of how can we help? How can we help these addicts? And how can we support and help each other, you know, in dealing with, you know, watching someone lose connection with their own soul. I mean, to me, that is the tragedy of addiction, whether it's alcohol or pills or other drugs or any addiction. Is that something else is running you. Something else is running you and not your own core being. You know, not your own inner authentic spirit isn't driving your car. Somebody else, you know, a zombie is taking you over, you know, and it ain't your spirit, you know. And so
And
so
people also are very, you know, I call them vampires. Because they stay up all night long, and they drain your energy is their blood, and they will drain the life out of you. And there's never enough. There is never enough. It's always give me more, give me more. My, you know, my son had, you know, taken many, many things from my home. And when he got to the instruments that I play, that's when I had to put my foot down. I was like, don't you take the violin. But, I mean, they will take and they will take and steal and beg and borrow and bribe and manipulate. And it by the end of the day, Mandy, that vampire has taken everything, every ounce of who you are in your soul.
Right.
And it's maybe that's how they feel. You know, maybe they're so empty that they, you know, you get a glimpse of that emptiness when they're continually taking from you. You know, that's maybe that's how they feel.
Yeah.
They're so empty, they make you empty. And
And that, Gyps, that's what you're going to love this. That's what Cindy just whispered to me, is that, you know, and Cindy has her own story of dealing with addiction, you know, having a loved one deal with addiction in her life. And she just said, she said it's because they have a hole within them that they cannot fill up. And we all can relate to that. You know, we all can relate to feeling incomplete. It's you know, it's what are the choices, what are the choices that we're going to make to help us live with some of that emptiness that we feel inside. I mean, I think that's some of the existential angst of being a human being, is that, you know, we don't fully feel, you know, totally whole. Even, you know, regardless of our religious or philosophical beliefs or traditions, I mean, that's a part of what it means to be human, is that journey of, you know, how do I bond deeply within my relationship to myself? And again, this is why I'm doing this work. This is why the respite exists. I mean, ultimately, it's about, and the seven-step model is about, hey, we want to give you some support and some suggestions in how to get to know yourself better and how to love yourself and how to embrace your own experience of being human. And by the way, grief is a big a part of being human as anything. It's just our American culture makes us, you know, drowns us in images of superficiality that we think if we're focusing on anything other than, you know, what the cultural says is normal, that there's something wrong with us.
Right.
And the opposite is true. Those cultural images, I'm sorry, but they're madness. That's not freaking reality. You know, it's not reality. But what's reality is this incredible spiritual journey within that we all are moving through in each of our own ways, in each of our own styles, in each of our own belief systems. And you firsthand have watched many people struggle with trying to fill up that emptiness with substances.
You know, one of the things that I always tell people that that use is it's obvious to me that you don't like you. You know, I look at young kids who start using young, like my son did. He's never had the opportunity to get to like anything about himself without putting a substance into his body and to his brain. So he really doesn't even know who he is. And maybe there's things that he thinks he doesn't like about himself. He doesn't want to work on them. But that's something I always tell people who use and who are addicts. You don't like you. And you're not giving yourself enough time to heal and to get to know you in sobriety.
Yeah, and that aspect of getting to know you. And this is where I think grief comes into play, Gypsy, is really saying to people, a part of getting to know you is really, you know, it's okay that you're also hurting. It's okay if you're also struggling. It's okay if you don't have it all together. I mean, hell, man, none of us have it all together. I mean, let's get real. Let's get really real.
Yeah.
None of us have it all together. Nobody has it all together. If they say they do, they're lying. Right? I mean, they're just lying. So,
yes,
I mean,
they are.
Yes. And so it's like, you know what? I want to speak with you about how, you know, this experience of, you know, how this bringing your pain and your joy and your life experiences and, you know, through your art and focusing on giving back, you know, focusing on service and giving back through your story. I mean, what do you want to share with our listeners about that? I mean, what's on your heart around any piece of that?
I think, Mandy, that everyone needs a creative hobby.
Yeah.
People say to me all the time, I don't have a creative bone in my body. Yes, you do. You do. Everyone does. If it's, and you don't have to be good at it. Do you think? You know, I wonder in my mind, does this person think they have to make a living out of it, or that they have to be really, really flawless at it in order for it to be a part of their healing and getting to know themselves?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Creative hobbies should be done in silence. They should be done with maybe a little good music, some candlelight, a good cold beer, whatever. But you're you're working and you're, you know, healing, painting for me has been, you know, so healing. And people come to me and they say, gosh, what would you do, Gypsy, if you didn't paint? Like, what would you do? And I said, maybe be like a serial killer or something. I don't know. Because my rage over the addiction and over the, everything is just like, I don't know the answer to that question, because it is the only thing that I pour myself into, and it has to be respected. It is a marriage to me. You know, people work on their jobs, you know, to stay at their jobs and their businesses and to stay in their marriages. Well, I have an intimate relationship with my art. And we fight and we scream at each other, and I yell at myself sometimes, Mandy. I'm like, why did I even choose to do this? Why? This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I want to beat myself up, and I'm a failure, and blah, blah, blah. And then the next day, we're sitting there together in silence going, God, I love you. I love you. Well, let me make love to the canvas here and put something beautiful out there, and it's going to come alive, and it's going to grow, and it's going to heal, and it's, you know, it's going to send hope and faith. And, really, I think that, you know, back to the question, people need to find a form of expressing themselves.
Yes.
You know, and a healthy form.
Yeah.
Because it's way harder, Mandy, to be good than it is to be bad. So to me, I look at people who choose a bad path, and I think, wow, they really, really like the easy way out of things. How easy is it to go, you know, buy a bottle of something and a bunch of pills and sit around and ignore what you need to be doing, the effort that you need to be putting into a purpose of your own or healing yourself. That's hard.
Right.
That's hard work to discipline yourself and do those things.
Mm. Gino Gypsy, I want to say I love what you're saying, that you are encouraging people that you meet, you're encouraging our friends and listeners that are with us today to, you know, find a way to creatively express who they are, what they experience in life, to express their joy, to express their pain, how healing and therapeutic that creativity is in your life. And I couldn't agree more. I know Cindy's been sitting here shaking her head. She, you know, Cindy is an artist. She sings. I mean, she has this amazing voice and uses her art and has created this incredible workshop called Noteworthy. And Cindy is a soul collage facilitator. And that art form is been a really powerful tool for many people. And is growing and is something that I know you would love. And but you take it a step further. You use your art for service. You use it to touch people. You use it to inspire people, to acknowledge people's experiences in life, to acknowledge people's suffering. I mean, you know, again, I want to say it was so important to me that my daughter is raised in an environment where there's a lot of vibrancy and color. And my purpose in that is to, like, you know, help reflect back the power and beauty within her own spirit. And mm-hmm. and your art is integral part of that in my home. I mean, you know, we have this, I forget how big, you know, that huge painting I bought from you of that angel, she's standing on the on planet Earth.
Yes,
you know,
and we couldn't figure out how to get
huge.
It to Charlotte.
Yeah, right. And it is hanging in my daughter's room. I mean, she sees it every day, you know, and I said, that is your spirit, you know, and she is standing on the earth, and the point is to inspire Tess that she is a leader to serve. She is here to serve, and how important our Mother Earth is. And
amazing.
And so what I want to encourage people is that when we talk about service, step 6 of the model of hearts of center grief, what I want to say to you, friends, is that whatever way you can give back to the planet, to animals, to elderly people, to neighbors, to the community, a particular charity, I mean, what a big clue is whatever has broken your heart is where your greatest calling lies. Wherever your wounds, what they're about in your life, will be a great clue for where you will feel called to serve and to give back. And I remember years ago I was sitting with a client and I was encouraging her to give back, to serve in some way. And she said to me, I don't need to serve to feel better. And I thought to myself, we're going to wait and see. So I want you to know, years later, this woman went on and got her yoga certification and is now a passionate yoga teacher, helping people connect with their bodies. And in fact, she has even gone to third world countries and to Africa to teach yoga and bring the empowerment of the connection with the body to people in poverty, people in war zones. I mean, it's amazing watching
wow.
people take their pain and through a process of time, like when I met with these three ladies yesterday, I did not say to them, you know, what I did say to them is I know that there's nothing that's going to be more meaningful and more helpful to you as time goes by than for you to find a way to take this pain and use it to help others. And
mm-hmm.
and I said, and by the way, and these women know me really well, but I said, and by the way, I'm not saying to go do that today. You know, it's only been 3 months, you know, since their, you know, beloved family member died. So I'm not saying to you, you know, get off your duff now. But what I am
right.
saying to you is begin thinking now, begin feeling now, begin connecting now with, all of this is going to lead me to help other people. All of this, I mean, you know, if you currently, friend, are going through a very raw, painful loss right now, present day, what I want to say to you is that life is bringing you through boot camp and training you right now and guiding you right now towards what your calling is, towards how you can give back. Because we're in a time in history where we need American people to wake up and give back. We need people to serve. And the beauty is there's no psychological tool or religious mumbo jumbo or new thought that hasn't already, it's all been said. It's all been said. Now what we have to do is recognize that what's going to help us feel empowered and feel hope and feel joy is using our own pain to help other people. There's nothing
yeah.
more helpful than that. Nothing. Mm-hmm. And that is what this step is about, that you can know as you're hurting, you're also in training, if you will, You're in boot camp, you know, being taught
right.
about your own spirit and about the things that fire you up and touch you deeply for you to then to be able to give back to other people. And that will bring you so much energy and exuberance and so, I mean, more joy than you can even imagine. And
absolutely.
Isn't that fascinating? It's incredible.
It is, and I agree with you 100%, Mandy. You know, I think that, you know, when you serve without motive, without expectation, without return, you know, let's make that clear, too, because a lot of times people will go serve and they, you know, well, why does nothing good ever happen back? I've been doing, you know, feeding the homeless for, you know, a year or whatever, and or whatever, you know, you reach out there and do.
Yeah.
But, you know, to have no expectations, to have no motive behind it, that's when it's so rejuvenating. When you watch the results of what you did, you know, absolutely free. You freely did it.
Yeah.
And you come home and you feel fantastic. And I'm just so blessed that I was given a gift to be able to do what I'm doing. And again, you know, my art to me is so reasonably priced. People ask me all the time, why are your prices so low? Why are they so low? They should be higher. Because I'm painting to heal more so than I am for money. And, of course, I need to pay my bills as well. But, you know, it's truly something that I love seeing the client that purchases a specific painting. I watch them. I observe them. I see them grab their hearts. I see them go back and look at that painting 3 or 4 times, and I just know. I know that, that they have fallen in love with, you know, the art itself, and it's hit home with them. So it's, and it's not all I do. You know, I don't just paint to serve.
Right, sure.
There's many other things.
But, I mean, I think, you know, really what you're saying, I mean, is that you are, I mean, this is the thing, you're just completely passionately committed regardless, you know, you have, and that's again what speaks to me and I relate to so much around my own work is that there is a marriage to it. I so relate to that, you know, I'm called to use my gifts no matter what. And how, though it may not completely, you know, logically make sense, there is a deeper wisdom of what's going on here that we have to trust. And that's what you've chosen to do, is you've chosen that all the things that have happened to you in your story from birth until now, you've chosen to find ways to use it, to create, to make a living, and to bless others. And many people are baffled by that. You know, it's like, how do you do it? And a big piece of that, friends, is that you trust. Sometimes you just, I know when we manifested, and we're still in the process of manifesting the respite, I mean, my partners, Elizabeth and Cindy and I, there was an aspect of it, to be honest, that we did just hold hands and jump. I mean, there's so much truth to that because we know we're being called to something that is bigger than us. You know, that our culture needs to be many voices out there. And we're just one of the voices out there encouraging people to be fully human and that it's okay. You know, I mean, it's okay to be real. And that grief is our great teacher. You know, it's not that I like to grieve. Are you kidding me? It hurts.
Right.
It hurts. You know, it's not that I like to grieve. I don't. Who likes to grieve? However,
right.
I know that I am here on this planet to support people in learning how to grieve and giving themselves permission to grieve. And you know what? One of the purposes around that is so that people don't escape into addiction, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because that is one of the reasons why people escape into addiction is because they're avoiding the pain of their lives.
Right.
And
absolutely.
And so, you know, we have so much to learn. We have so much to learn about giving ourselves.
I read something this morning. that said, you can't rewrite your beginning, but you can certainly change your ending.
Yeah.
And that really hit home with me this morning. I like to wake up and read some very inspirational quotes, and that was one of them that hit me today, and I thought, isn't that true? You know, we can't go back and change things, but we certainly can move forward and change the ending, you know. So
yeah.
I just think that, you know, our listeners out there, you know, again, just summing it all up is serving and using your grief and your pain into something that's healthy and supportive for others and helpful. It really is
and
the
now,
key to
yes,
the healing.
Yes. And what I want to add to add to your perfect summary, my friend, is that, you know, and to say no to shame, you know,
yes.
to say no to shame. I mean, we recently at the Respite, we have this incredible program called Hope Back Home, and we're working with female veterans, and these women are so inspiring. Talk about women that have known suffering. I mean, these women. I mean, just strong soldiers, powerful women. And our program is designed to help them move through the losses and what they experienced in their lives and in the military and in combat. And we were talking about saying no to shame. And I was saying one of my, and this is very irreverent, but one of my favorite exercises is like, I mean, I was like, okay, everybody, let's raise our middle finger. And say, you know, F you to shame. You know, I mean,
right.
like, friends, don't let shame get a hold of you. Don't.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do it. And so in needing to begin to wrap up our show today, which, by the way, Gyps, I could talk to you for 10 hours, which I know we've done in the past. And we will again, my friend. I can't
yes,
wait to
will.
Actually see you in the flesh. But I want to say to you all that are listening is that we will have Cindy will be posting a link right at the end of our show where you can go back and listen to it again. You can send it on to friends. We will have the Gypsy's website where you can go and find her art. Gypsy does ship all over. And she has, you know, definitely has a really wonderful, wonderful way of taking your story and creating a piece of visual art for it. In fact, I had met a dear woman and her son had tragically died in a car accident. And one of the first things I said to her is, you've got to meet Gypsy. You've got to tell mm-hmm. Gypsy about your son. And Gypsy painted this incredible representation of his life and then shipped it to her. So this is a powerful woman who the spirit moves through her and she can really hear your story and create something beautiful from it. And that then supports you. It honors your story, friends, and allows you to be inspired by the beauty of your own story, your own path. And it brings great dignity. It's like you're ennobling your own incredible story. And I also want to remind you that if you have curiosity, if you want to learn more about the 7 steps of grief and hope, these 7 steps, this model that I had the privilege to co-create with Chris Saadi, my dear friend and colleague, it is not for people who are grieving only. It is a model for inspiration. These 7 steps are designed to encourage you towards joy as well. They're designed to encourage you about your human story, to inspire you and empower you. And the last thing I want to say is you can find us at therespite.org. And, Gyps, I have something fun to tell you. I want to make sure that I do this. My father told me to tell you hello, by the way.
Aw. Hi, Daddy.
Oh, I know. That's so sweet. Okay, so thank you so much. You guys have a great weekend. Gypsy, it's been amazing. Thank you for all your
Thank
wisdom
you,
and
Mandy.
Heart
Thank you,
sharing.
Cindy.
It's been beautiful. Okay, you guys have an awesome weekend. Take really good
yes.
care. Bye, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, sweetie.
Bye.